This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. When the votes were tabulated after the 2004 presidential election, the results confused journalist Melinda Henneberger. Talk about values voters and security moms dominated the post-election analysis, but another statistic caught her attention. The gender gap had narrowed by 3 percentage points. Traditionally, a significant majority of women prefer Democrats. A Democrat herself, Henneberger, wondered why more women went with Bush the second time around and didn't think the exit polls asked the right questions. So she went across the country with the idea of asking her own. Early on, she learned that the smart thing to do was listen. Henneberger visited 20 states and spoke with hundreds of women from all walks of life about why they voted the way they did. The result is a new book, If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. A little later, amidst cutbacks at newspapers, a new fight to save the endangered book review section. But first, If They Only Listen to Us, we want to hear from women today. What issues do you vote on? Do you feel that politicians understand your concerns? Are you a party loyalist? Why or why not? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And with us here in Studio 3A is Melinda Henneberger. She's a regular contributor to the online magazine Slate. And thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And I guess we need to reemphasize the point. You approached this project as a Democrat, and at least part of the idea was to find out what your party was doing wrong.
Well, after the election, I was not happy with the result, but I was also bothered by the fact that I didn't know what to make of it. So as a journalist, what I do with that is ask questions and try to figure it out. So it was for therapeutic as much as journalistic reasons that I really thought, since I don't know the answer, I think I'll just ask them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best professional experience of my life to have the luxury of spending all this time just listening. And the great thing was that I didn't go out with a theory in my pocket. I didn't know the answer beforehand. And there's so few times when you get that chunk of time to just listen to people at length and hear what their concerns are. And I didn't, in the end, ask questions. Because we know that that makes a big difference to what answer you get.
Sure.
So I just listened to their concerns and to them talk about their political lives and learned a lot.
Hmm. Is this, as people would say, an unscientific survey?
Oh, completely. Completely beyond random. I found these women. I first decided where to go. And the majority of places I went were swing states, but not all. For example, I was interested in going to New Orleans because I wanted to see what women felt when the role of government had been put into such stark relief and had so clearly let them down. Where do you go from that politically?
Yeah.
I was interested in going to Texas to see what it was like on Bush's home turf. I went to Massachusetts also, California. But they were mainly swing states. And how did I find the women? Through friends of friends or some non-political mention in a local paper often. And they, almost no one said no. They put me on to their friends and so on and so on. Hmm. And often I would speak to groups of friends. So they would ask each other. And one of the first things I learned is how unexamined our political lives still are. Mm-hmm. Compared to sex or religion. We still don't, for a lot of people, that's obviously not true in Washington, still don't talk about those things because we're afraid we don't want to get into a conflict often.
Yeah, a lot of the women told you, you said, look, this may be just me. I don't really talk about this to anybody.
Right.
But, you know, and then go on to talk about it.
Right.
Nobody asked them.
When I first went out, I would typically say, do you think that's a widely shared view among your friends? And they'd say, oh, gosh, I wouldn't know. I never talked to anybody about this stuff. And I remember one young woman in Sacramento saying, you know, it's kind of like, don't ask, don't tell. Hmm. Or they had no idea, even when they all agreed, they had no idea.
Hmm. You started out by going back to Mount Carmel, Illinois, the town you grew up
That's
in,
right.
To talk with your three closest friends from high school. You
right.
all get together, I guess, once or twice a year.
Right.
The girls you ran the school newspaper with.
Right.
And found that there were bigger differences than you might have thought.
Well, one of the other inspirations for the book was thinking back on something that had happened the week the war in Iraq began. And the four of us had gotten together for a little hiking get-together in West Virginia. And we had never talked about politics, unbelievably. And one of my friends suggested that we sing patriotic songs as we hiked along to support the troops in Iraq. And this led to our first argument since high school. Definitely. And we discovered that we were as divided as the rest of the country over the war and more. But that realization that I didn't even know what some of my closest friends from high school were really thinking and what their political motivations were made me realize how much we have to learn about those motivations.
You say you didn't start out with a thesis that you were trying to test. Did you come back with a thesis?
I came back with a lot of, this is not one of those six steps to glory for the Democrats kind of book. It's one of my...
Democrats should be worried reading this book.
As much as I went into this as a Democrat, I'm more revealing that's my own, my own philosophical roots. But more than anything, I wanted people to take a minute and... see things from other people's perspectives, so that if I really have one goal for the book, it's you're going to meet some women in this book with whom you agree on nothing. And you don't have to agree with them, but I hope after you finish reading this, you'll realize you'll maybe have a little better understanding of why they feel the way they do.
Let's get some women into the conversation, some other women. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Eunice. Eunice with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was telling your screener that I am an African-American who is a registered Democrat. However, in the last election, I voted for President Bush. Because of the issues in regard to homosexuality or gay marriage, not particularly homosexuality, but and also the issue of abortion. So those issues, when it came out about morality, meaning, and making a difference to voters, that's how I felt. And that's how, as a follower of Christ, not just saying I'm a Christian, but wanting to follow, you know, thus is the word, I just felt like I could not support someone who did not support my religion, my faith.
And Senator Kerry, of course, is Catholic.
I'm sorry?
Senator Kerry, his opponent, is also a religious man. He's a Catholic.
Well, I listened to all three debates. I did not want to hear just tidbits from the news, and I knew exactly what he said he supported, but his votes in the Senate differed. And that is not, you know, to me, you can say one thing, and if you're not a follower, that's just where I draw the line. And I listened to President Bush even back in 2000 when the issue of gay marriage wasn't even, you know, Massachusetts hadn't legalized it yet, and his answer was he did not support same-sex marriage. He was not against homosexuals. He just did not support homosexual marriage, and that is something that's important to me because I know exactly what my Bible says about that.
Melinda Henneberger, Eunice, at least according to your book, is hardly alone.
No, Eunice, I met lots of women who feel exactly that way. In fact, if the two biggest things I found were how crucial the whole abortion issue was to the last election, and I think will be to the next one as well. And I have a whole chapter on African-American women opposition to gay marriage that I think Democrats may not always realize what a hot button issue, what a problematic issue that is in that community.
And let me just say that I'm not, I have friends who are gay and I know them personally, but I just cannot compromise my faith, you know, and I won't even do that for my own husband or my children.
The thing that I think Democrats need to think about on that, on gay marriage and the African-American community in particular, maybe, is there was so much opposition to Bush that I heard. But I remember one woman saying, you know, I could see myself peeling off from the Democratic Party in the future over this issue because it's a real problem for me. At the moment, I'm more afraid of George Bush than I am of gay marriage. But once he's out of the picture, I think I'm gone from the Democrats. And I heard that sort of thing a lot.
Eunice, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get this is Sandy on the line. Sandy's with us from Cincinnati.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My viewpoint is actually quite a bit different. I used to be a Republican, and as you recall, the Republicans brought us Roe v. Wade and the right to choose, and I am still pro-choice. They also brought us conservation and the idea of protecting the environment. When the Republicans turned their back on that, then I became basically independent, and eventually, I think in my state I can only register as either Democrat or Republican, so I'm a registered Democrat, but I do vote mostly Democrat or independent. I do not vote anything for Republicans until they change that.
Mm-hmm. And the environment, Melinda, was another big issue for a lot of women you spoke with.
It certainly was. Huge and, I think, increasing.
Hmm.
And the other point would be with the whole gay marriage thing, Europe is so far ahead of us in that they don't have necessarily marriage, but they do recognize civil unions. And I believe that people have that right of choice. And I also don't believe that homosexuality is a choice for someone. I don't believe that you just decide one day, well, I think I'll be homosexual or heterosexual. If you are homosexual, then I think you have a right to a sacred union and a civil union and the rights that other marriage provides for heterosexuals.
Sandy, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking with Melinda Henneberger. Her new book is called If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. We'll take more of your calls after a break. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A bit later, we'll talk with the president of the National Book Critics Circle about the demise of the newspaper Book Review. Right now, though, we're talking with Melinda Henneberger. Her book is called If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. In it, she set out to learn what issues are most divisive and interesting to women and what sways women's votes. There's an excerpt at our website at npr.org/talk. We want to hear from women voters on this. Do you vote with your pocketbook on social issues or based on the candidate? Have you recently switched parties? Why? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And I wanted to read to you something that you wrote, Melinda, about visiting a woman named Beth in Massachusetts. She says she's conservative on social issues. What she means is she doesn't necessarily want to be too closely associated with the word liberal. I don't want my 12-year-old having oral sex with five guys in school on a dare. I'm in lots of moms group. A lot of us feel there should be less sexualization of kids. A lot of us feel let's err on the conservative side. We associate that with politics. We feel like Democrats are so out of date with their socialist 60-esque ideas. They haven't evolved and they don't speak to me.
Right. I thought this was really interesting that she's calling her, and she's not alone, obviously,
mm-hmm.
calling herself a social conservative and saying she's strongly pro-choice, strongly in favor of gay rights and thinks gay marriage should be legal, is extremely pleased that there's this group called the Log Cabin Republicans of gay Republicans, because that makes her feel more comfortable, because if they don't have a problem with the Republicans, why should she? Down the line, this list of beliefs that we would normally think of as socially liberal, but she feels, obviously, that she grew up as a Democrat and, in fact, swung to Ralph Nader in 2000 to Bush in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Because more and more as a mom, she associates sort of, you know, horrible TV and the coarsening of the culture with the party she grew up in. She sees the social conservative label as a moral status symbol and as sort of a mark of good parenting, something she and her friends were talking about. Where she lives outside Boston, is one woman said, you know, I vote like a Democrat, but I mother like a Republican, meaning I'm a responsible person. And I thought, boy, can our political self-esteem get any lower if we now think that being a responsible parent is mothering like a Republican.
The other thing that interested me was your conclusion, and this more particularly in the Midwest necessarily than in Massachusetts, but that the Democrats were regarded as the smarty pants party.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is this widespread perception of condescension on the part of National Democrats to people living between the coasts, somewhere other than Hollywood and Harvard. And yes, part of that is sold every day on Fox News, but there is some of it that it works because there's a kernel of truth, I think. And I people would talk about how condescended to they felt as Christians in particular, and they feel that all the jokes about how dumb Bush is, Bush and other conservatives, make them feel, I resemble that remark. You know, if that's what they think about Bush, maybe that's what they think about me. And those not all that funny jokes are really backfiring on Democrats.
Let's get some more callers on the line. This is Beth. Beth with us from Saratoga in California.
Yes, I'm actually sitting in my car with my two children. I'm 27, I'm a Mormon, and I'm a woman. And I have felt so alienated because I feel I'm not pro-choice zealously, I'm not pro-life zealously, I'm not anti-gay, but I'm uncomfortable with gay marriage, but not hatefully. And so I have a hard time. I regret to say I didn't even vote in the last election because I felt so ill-informed, maybe, or not that no one really represented where I was at. I couldn't vote for Bush with a clear conscience, but I didn't agree with other things. And I relate to the woman who says, I parent like a Republican, but I kind of am a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that to be responsible as a mother, you know, I want to protect my children from certain things. But at the same time, I want my children to respect the environment, to respect every human being and to see the world as a global community. And sometimes that's my children honking the horn.
Ah.
Sometimes I feel like neither party represents all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, guys. So I appreciate this conversation because I think it's so important. And I think I've talked to many mothers and many young women who are still in my position.
I hope nobody's trying to nap nearby.
No, nobody is. We're in a parking lot.
Okay.
But now I'm going to go tell them. Thank you.
All right. All right. Thanks very much, Beth.
Most people are in the middle on abortion. Most every poll that's been done, and certainly what I heard from this woman, indicates that most people are between never and no problem on abortion. And I think that the Democratic Party doesn't help itself when, for example, after the recent Supreme Court decision on partial birth abortion, it refuses to make the distinction between a fetus in the very earliest weeks of development and a nearly full-born child that most American voters do. And when that view is tagged as extremist by Democrats, it's not a selling point for the party that I think most supports the already born.
Let's go to Sarah. Sarah's with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a college freshman at the University of Arizona, and last year I actually graduated from an elite all-girls private Catholic school in Phoenix. And my observation is just that, like, in my experience, like, I grew up in a household that encouraged me to be very politically aware, very politically active, but we're not allowed to have political clubs where our brother school, Brophy, was allowed to. And I just wanted to ask, how do you feel young women are encouraged or discouraged to explore themselves and be involved politically?
I think that it's, you know, part of this being politically correct is being so afraid to that we might offend someone if we have a position that's maybe 2 degrees different from theirs. That means we don't talk about it, and we should be talking about it. We should learn to disagree in a better way. And I know even in my own kids' schools here, they are banned from talking about their favorite thing, which is politics. And I disagree with that because I think it's no accident that adults can't get into this stuff without losing their tempers when they're not trained to be able to have a civil conversation about it in which they can disagree respectfully.
You spoke with young women at a couple of interesting places, two young women who were working for Catherine Harris in her doomed candidacy for the United States Senate, and young women in Michigan who attended a rally, a John Edwards rally, to some degree found him somewhat disappointing.
Right. The women at the Edwards rally were particularly interesting, I thought, because these were women who volunteer a lot of their time, and a lot of them who turned out on that extremely cold day in Ann Arbor in the middle of winter to hear him had signed up for the Peace Corps and were trying to really committed to doing what they could on Edwards' signature issue, which is fighting poverty. And they felt that though it was good that he was raising the issue, they were a little disappointed that the discussion didn't have a little more depth to it. I personally was so grateful that he was the first Democrat in quite some time to speak so much about the issue of the have-nots and our moral obligation to the have-nots in this country, that I gave him a lot of points for that. But at the same time, after you're talking about this issue for quite a while, you would like to see him get maybe a little more complexity going.
Sarah, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Here's an email question. This is from Keith in Topeka, Kansas. After hearing the woman talk about voting Republican because she opposed gay marriage, even though she agreed with Democrats on almost all other issues, I've got to admit I don't understand voting for a candidate on a single issue if I disagree with that person on all other issues. Is this type of polarization on single issues more prevalent with women voters than it is with men?
No, I don't think so. I think it's something with religious swing voters that, you know, a lot of these women who said they voted over abortion in 2004 for the first time ever are clearly not single-issue voters. They are feeling that they are excluded and unwelcome in the party over the issue, even though they're not only voting on that issue. It's that they see that issue, as one woman in Denver told me, you know, I agree with the party on 90% of the issues, but if you're pro-life, they don't even want you. So it's not that they feel that they can only be purists on this and only vote for a Democrat, or they'd never vote for a Democrat. They're just feeling increasingly excluded by the language that the Democratic Party uses over this issue. And I also think that this just confirms their larger apprehensions about how people in the party disdain people of too often people of faith.
Let's go to Peggy. Peggy with us from the Bay Area.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling to respond to a comment that was made earlier, and this is an excellent dialogue, by the way, by the young African-American woman who said that she voted for President Bush based on his position on the homosexual and the abortion issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also an African-American woman and a person of faith. And what I felt about assessing George Bush's comments as a Christian, he fell far short of the mark, because I feel that if you're arguing that human life is sacred, then human life should be sacred at all ages and at all stages, not just in utero. If my child's life is sacred and that valuable, in utero, should be protected at all costs, then my son's life when he hits 25, 26 should be just as sacred to President Bush as a Christian before he sends that child off to Iraq without truly checking the details or truly getting all the information and so willy-nilly engaging in that. And that, to me, as a Christian, is where his faith falls flat and is lacking. Personally, I am pro-choice, and I am very open-minded on the homosexual agenda, and that's also, as opposed to the other caller, how I interpret what I see in the Bible. But thanks for taking my call.
Okay, Peggy. Thanks very much.
I think it's interesting that it's Democrats who have tirelessly sold our current president, who I have always seen as the best friend corporate America ever had, as this committed, in fact, obsessed pro-lifer who would stop at nothing to see Roe v. Wade overturned. And this issue has been very, very good to the Republican Party. So I think that Democrats don't always realize what an ad. I mean, Karl Rove couldn't have said it better himself, that when they present Bush as so committed to this issue, it has not worked in their favor.
We're talking with Melinda Henneberger. Her book is If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to hear, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we have from Beth in, I think, Portland, Oregon. Do most women not think about foreign policy, national debt, diplomacy, economics? The comments on the show have been largely about women in conflict over political opinions related to parenting, abortion, gay marriage, and the environment. But the bigger impact of our votes for national leaders is on the issues I listed above. I care about these things far more than the others because they have larger ramifications, in my opinion.
Women care deeply about the war. The thing that I found interesting on that, and of course they talked a lot about Iraq throughout the process, what I found interesting was the depth of opposition to the war in Iraq, even among Bush voters, even immediately after the 2004 election. I felt that even then, a lot of them said they voted for Bush in spite of Iraq, not because of it.
Hmm.
And I did not find these so-called security moms.
That they voted him for him, the theory being that they voted for him because they thought he would be a better protector.
I did not hear that. On the contrary, I met so many women who had never voted for a Democrat in their lives who switched from Bush in 2000 to Kerry in 2004 over the war alone.
Hmm.
I guess the reason I'm emphasizing abortion here so much is that the defectors seem to talk about that as much. But I certainly think that in a way, nothing will be, I mean, mm-hmm. obviously, Iraq is at the top of the agenda.
But one of the things you also found is that though they are maybe disappointed with George Bush's performance on Iraq, that does not necessarily make them more likely to vote for a Democrat in 2008.
Interesting. If there was one thing that surprised me most of all, it was the number of people who proclaim themselves furious with the Bush administration over nearly everything they've ever done. The one question I did allow myself to ask always was, so does this mean you're more likely to vote for Democrat in 2008? And they would almost invariably say, not just no, but of course not. Like I'd said something funny, like, why would that be? They really, when they talk about Republicans may be dissatisfied with this administration, but are looking at other Republicans. But independents as well don't seem to be holding this against all other Republicans. So I think especially if you had a Republican, for example, they talk a lot about, this kind of person talks a lot about Chuck Hagel.
Mm-hmm.
And they give him extra points for having bucked his own party on the war, at least recently. Same thing with John McCain before he became so closely aligned with the president on this issue. They thought that he was the most, they saw him as one of the most effective critics the president has had.
And one other thing I found interesting, the number of women you spoke with who thought that Hillary Clinton, the most prominent woman candidate, would make a good president or be elected president.
I think Senator Clinton has a mountain to climb with a lot of women voters to, of course, on the right, I don't even need to speak about it.
Mm-hmm.
On the left, there's a lot of dissatisfaction with her support for the war, deep dissatisfaction. In fact, it might have been one of the few points of unity I saw on the right and the left. Their feeling about Hillary Clinton now would be hard to say who's angrier. But I think what her campaign might be most concerned about are those women in the middle for whom it's not issues-based, who just seem to have, who said again and again, I find her phony. I don't know if even she believes what she's saying. I think she's saying what I want what she thinks I want to hear. And when the perception is inauthenticity, that's something that's very difficult to reposition yourself out of.
But in short, of the hundreds of women you spoke to about Hillary Clinton, the number who said they thought she would be president was zero.
That's correct.
Our guest is Melinda Henneberger. Her book, If They Only Listened to Us, she joined us today here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
When we come back from a short break, a new effort to save the endangered book review. Newspapers argue they don't sell papers. What about you? Do you read them? 800-989-8255. This is NPR News.